Hi, and welcome to the next in my series of podcasts. We're in for a treat today. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about prop tech. And by prop tech, we're talking about everything that's going on in that world across the industry. And we're not talking about home working and Zoom calls necessarily. And it really is my pleasure and treat to have Kadeen James on air, not in my studio. And I'm just going to read her bio, or a short part of her bio, because it fascinates me every time I look at it. Top 100 women in tech UK, VR, AR, XR, creative tech lead, founder of The Immersive Kind, UK lead woman in 3D printing, works at Hobbs 3D. I think you're in for a real treat. And with that, Kadeen, I'm going to hand it over to you. And maybe you can just give us a little bit of an introduction or an explanation of all those multiple things that you're doing.
Hi, Michael. Wow, I don't know how to follow that, really. I am Kadeen James. I'm the creative tech lead at Hobbs 3D. We're a digital virtual reality AR studio. We're also specialists in 3D printing. We work across the built environment and the property sector and the creative industries, and using technology to visualize and create for our clients and for audiences all over the world. On top of that, I'm also the UK lead for Women in 3D Printing, which is a platform that looks to inspire, encourage, and support more women and girls into additive manufacturing technologies. And our mission with Women in 3D Printing is to increase the visibility of women in additive manufacturing industries and encourage more women and girls to use additive manufacturing technologies and creating career pathways into science, into tech, and into engineering. So I'm doing a lot of work in and around that space. And then I'm also the founder of The Immersive Kind, which is a platform for artists, for data scientists, for robotics engineers, and people that are using emerging technologies in their practice. And we work across industry, across the creative sector, and across the tech sector, looking at ways that we can support the startup community and act as a bridge between tech, innovation, academia, and students, and looking at ways that we can use technology for good.
Wow. Well, I'm going to try and now break that down, and maybe we can sort of tackle one thing at a time. And I thought I did a lot. So if we look at, and I kind of want to talk about this in in the world before the world we're in now, but obviously it has a massive impact, and I think that's only going to increase. But in terms of working with the property industry, can you give some examples of the type of ways you've been helping cities and individuals and architectural practice visualize and think about what it is that they're doing in a way that the rest of us can understand?
Yeah, sure. So at Hobbs 3D, we are working across 3D solutions. So we work with architects, with engineers, with construction sector, and product designers, and we have a whole team of specialists that are using the latest 3D printing technologies, 3D visualization technologies. We're specialists in model making and 3D printing. We're using additive manufacturing, digital workflows, and then we've also got a whole team of Unreal artists and animators that are producing 3D visualization, immersive walkthroughs, virtual tours, augmented reality experiences. We've also taken one of the biggest master planning projects in Europe into virtual reality. And we're creating virtual tours and fly-throughs for the property sector.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you there. Sorry, just otherwise I'm going to, I'm not going to get to everything I want to ask you. So you mentioned two things there. One, you said a master plan. Can you give us a little bit more detail? What's the technology doing that's allowing that master plan to come to life?
Sure. So we have partners that fly aeroplanes over sites and locations across the country. We've been working with a large developer here in the UK where we've captured LiDAR data of an area of Southeast London. We've then taken that LiDAR data into Unreal Engine, so into gaming technology. And that's now being used as a tool to create virtual reality experiences of that site and of that location, where people can walk through their neighborhood virtually. We've also been doing a lot of work with architects, with the regeneration team and with the planning team, and with the local residents, using the virtual reality model as a tool for engaging with residents around place shaping, and the plan is to use this as part of the design and design review process with the developers and with the architectural practices, and we've also been taking that virtual reality model into public realms, so looking at giving the community tools such as virtual reality, 360 filming, and 3D printing, and allowing residents, or giving residents the digital tools to show what they might like to see in terms of public realm and in terms of new housing and developments that are set to be built over the next 10 years over in Thamesmead in Southeast London. So we've been doing some really interesting work in and around that space.
So that's a way in which developers, owners of big schemes can connect more with all the stakeholders, meaning their local community, be that residential or be that, could be retail, it could be the office users, it could be all the people working in that area, but you bring the whole kind of scheme to life so they can understand better what's being proposed.
Absolutely. And using the virtual reality model as a tool to engage with residents around what's set to come before a single brick has been laid. So we're able to use 3D visualization and data visualization to showcase what the architects are planning and what those buildings are going to look like before they've even been built. So residents will be able to tour those homes and those apartments and those spaces before those buildings are even, you know, before a single brick has been laid. So this technology, I think, is going to be used much more in terms of how we visualize and communicate buildings. And I think it's a really exciting time in terms of communities being able to participate in place shaping and using new technology as a tool for that. That's something that I'm really excited about.
Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned, which I guess overlaps with that, was, I think you called it virtual tours. So presumably by that, you're talking about giving, could be an office tenant a tour of an office building, or could be a same, but for residential through a new flat. Is that what you were referring to?
Absolutely, that's exactly it. So being able to visualize virtually, so a virtual space of what that building or what that master plan is going to look like before we go into construction. So we're able to look at designs, review those designs, and explore with residents and get them involved in how these buildings take shape and how we create cities in the future, looking at the built environment, particularly using innovation and digital twinning and models, digital models which are enabling architects and the construction industry and building managers to kind of look at the future, if you like, in terms of being able to showcase what their buildings are going to look like, and answer sometimes difficult and challenging questions around how those projects are going to be delivered, and looking at digital assets, so building information modeling, and looking at digital reproductions and digital twins and BIM data alongside building automated systems and sensors and networks that bring a whole kind of building or a place together, and using these tools to engage with residents and with buyers and with stakeholders. And I think that this creates a constantly evolving collaborative vision, if you like, between multiple disciplines and sectors, architects, engineers, developers. And I think that we're going to see these tools being used much more so in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. And actually makes me think of a couple of questions, but that last point is, I think, is really interesting. So do you see that the technology that you're using, the work you're doing, it sounds like it's making it easier for those cross-disciplinary groups to come together and work together to see what it is that they're producing. I guess that's one question. And then the second question is, is it sort of an iterative process? Do you mean you build these models and then the architects, engineers look at them and then probably realize things that they didn't know was going to be the impact of what they designed, and so they're then changing those models as a result? Or are you just building something at the end which says, this is what you've designed, this is what it's going to look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good point. And I think, throughout the planning stages, architects can remodel and update their building plans, and digital technology is allowing us to update and recompute and review. And I think it's also a tool that is being used to evaluate the building's physical characteristics, and looking at modelling and airflow and energy use and the connectivity of a building, and how we as users of buildings and spaces are navigating, and how our movements are being tracked by the building and sensors within those buildings. And I think digital twinning is allowing architects and developers to go through 1,000 changes before the final version, if you like, is finalized and before we move into construction. I think digital twins are really useful in terms of architects being able to test, monitor, evaluate, review before we go into the live project. And these are the sorts of things that we are producing within our studio, visualizing data and allowing developers and the construction industry to visualize and communicate what their vision is, and taking that visualization experience to planners, to stakeholders, to investors, and indeed into communities to form part of the wider place shaping of cities up and down the country. So there are a number of things that we're doing in and around that, but ultimately using technology as a tool to visualize and communicate.
Okay, great. And that kind of takes me to a couple of different places. But the first is, I'm assuming that the visual tools, if we go to the office and the residential market, the tools that you're talking about, I mean, I guess once we get into, not back to normal, but back to work in the office or in the way we used to, I'm imagining you're thinking that the ability to allow people to do virtual tours of space is just going to increase, given the need to keep safe distances from people and just everyone's general inability to work the way we used to work.
Absolutely. I think especially during this time of marketing suites being closed, tools across, the construction sector being people dropping tools and us not being building at the moment, I think we're going to see much more so as we have, virtual tours and virtual walkthroughs being deployed as a way of being able to engage during this time of national emergency and whilst everybody's being told to stay at home. So technology is allowing the built environment to communicate and visualize what their schemes are going to look like. And I think virtual reality, augmented reality, virtual tours and walkthroughs are allowing developers in the built environment to communicate and market their schemes during this time of national emergency and lockdown.
Kadeen, we were lucky enough a few weeks ago to have Gavin Pooley from Here East on air. We've yet to release that, but we will be doing that soon. And one of the things he was talking about was how he reached out into the community and the community worked with him to create what is now Here East. And I know you're a tenant there. And one of the things he was talking about was how important it was to have the right types of businesses there and the cross collaboration. So kind of in a human sense, I think that's what they've been trying to create along, if you like, which is a parallel to what you've just been talking about in a technology sense. But maybe you could give us your insights into your experience working there.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Gavin and the wider ecosystem and this incredible community that we have over at the Olympic Park, which I'm honoured to be a part of. And we moved to here east from Old Street about 2.5 years ago now. And we're part of a wider campus community of academics. We've got UCL based there, Loughborough University has over 800 tech startups that are also based at Plexel. We're doing incredible partnership work in collaboration with all of the kind of businesses that are based at Here East, and also working really closely alongside academics and researchers. And I think that space has been incredible for us in terms of the opportunities for collision and collaboration, and looking at ways that we can work together to support the industrial and technology strategy for the UK, and equally looking at ways that we can work with the local community. One of the great things that we've done, we've launched a digital skills academy with LODC and the Mayor's office and the Mayor's Digital Skills Programme. So we're working with young Londoners from across the Olympic Park, from across Hackney, Tower Hamlets, Newham and Waltham Forest. We've got 60 on our programme at the moment that are all learning 3D design skills. They're learning about Unreal Engine, Unity, how to create virtual reality experiences, and we're doing some really incredible work and are part of a kind of community for innovation, and also looking at ways that we can support social mobility and social impact. And that's something that's been really powerful in terms of moving to the Olympic Park and looking at ways that that we can, you know, build opportunities such as the work that we've been doing with the 3D Skills Academy. And I think the people at Here East are really pushing the boundaries in terms of business, in terms of innovation, in terms of technology, and looking at how we can do things differently. I'm also thinking about education and art and the creative industries, part of an incredible cluster of makers and of designers and of creatives. And there's incredible things that are happening in East London, and it's a huge honour to be a part of the Here East community.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear a tech person talking so eloquently about the need for the human contact as well, and the fact that it's about working across the arts and in the community. It's not just about programming, it's about so many more things. And this world we live in now, we've got to get right this combination of tech and human element. I guess where I wanted to go to next with that was 5G. So obviously that's a sort of one of the big buzzwords, that 5G is being rolled out. Can you talk about it in terms of what difference will that make to all the technologies that you've been talking about? And you know, if you look forward 12, 24 months, are we going to see a rapid improvement and change in the work that you are able to do because of 5G?
I think that there's going to be lots of work to do, and the government have got their hands full at the moment. And I think we're both aware of the reality of that. I think that the 5G strategy, which has identified the actions that the government is going to be taking in order for the UK to be a world leader in 5G, I think that there's going to be lots of work that needs to be done in and around that when we come out of this national emergency. I think developing a future which will be focused and policy that will help us to ensure that the spectrum is allocated in a way that supports business and the government's mobile ambitions, and equally how it can plug into rural communities, and thinking about the existing frameworks that are in place The support that's going to be needed in terms of commercial investment in 5G infrastructure and services to ensure that the UK does become a world leader, because clearly there's going to be lots of work that needs to be done. I'm thinking about our UK future telecoms infrastructure and the review that will take place, and we'll need to assess whether further policy interventions will be needed, and I'm sure that they will be, to create the conditions for long-term investment in a world-class digital connectivity platform, which we clearly need. I think that setting up a cross-government barrier-busting task force to address the specific challenges related to the deployment of the telecoms infrastructure is in place. And I'm aware that local government is doing all that it can to make sites available for the deployment of the infrastructure and to deliver the levels of connectivity which are clearly needed across the country. So I think that 5G is going to allow us to do much more, but we need to make sure that we've got the infrastructure, the investment, the resources and collaborations in place in order to deliver it successfully for the country.
Right. And one of the things you mentioned earlier was digital twins, which seems to me, I mean, from a layman's point of view, that's quite of a what I call a new technology. I mean, maybe you could just explain that exactly how you're using digital twins in the property context, but also, are there other, I guess, new technologies coming along that you're beginning to see being used in the property world? I mean, I think you touched on VR, and I'm just wondering if there's other things that people like me would never have heard of that you can tell us about.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be seeing VR and AR being used much more so. I'm also thinking about digital twinning and 3D information and how that's visualized and communicated, and 5G powering that and those tools in terms of holograms and in terms of being able to engage with new and diverse audiences all over the world because of the power of technologies that will be powered by the 5G infrastructure, and also looking at what that's going to mean for business when that's implemented. We've also been producing AR and VR experiences where we're able to overlay digital information in real time and visualize what a site or a location is going to look like. So I think we're gonna see much more of that. And I know that the property sector are implementing these tools and digital workflows in terms of how they manage buildings and how we use technology to explore sites and locations and visualize what a space what a space looks like to potential investors and developers. And I think that that's just going to continue. Technology is moving at such a fast pace, and it's allowing us to do things that we could never imagine that we were going to do. And I think that it's a very exciting time, and I'm really keen to look at ways that we might be able to use technology for good, and how the built environment we'll be able to support that in terms of, tackling homelessness, tackling the ecological and climate emergency that we face, particularly around green and blue infrastructure, the sorts of tools that we're using in the construction industry that are damaging the environment, and how technology and artificial intelligence can look to change that for the better for future generations. And I think that we all need to work together to address that. I'm really excited about what that could mean in terms of collaborations that are powered by tech and industry, and looking at the industrial strategy and the construction sector being able to implement these tools to build greener buildings, and also looking at biotechnology and architects that are looking at you know, new tools, new design solutions and new design thinking, so that we can tackle the biggest challenge that we face in terms of the climate emergency and also during this national pandemic, a global pandemic that we have because of the climate emergency.
Maybe we could just touch on that. I know before we went on air, as it were, we were talking about the pandemic, and I know you're doing a lot of work not related to property, but related to that. But I think this idea of collaboration is really key to it. And I also think I couldn't agree with you more when you say that, that hopefully we can take some of this energy around finding a solution to a major issue and apply it to other things that once we've solved this problem, and hopefully we come back fitter and stronger, as it were, and can tackle climate. But can you talk a little bit, I think it'd be really interesting just to talk a little bit about some of the work you're doing in relation to this very specific problem we're all faced with now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am volunteering with the NHS Heroes. I'm also part of a community of academics, researchers, makers, additive manufacturing experts. And part of the SHIELD network, which is a best practice collaboration of independent PPE, so protective clothing campaign for the NHS, which has brought together thought leaders and industry experts, and our community members are united in the critical mission to provide the NHS and care workers with the vital PPE and equipment that they need urgently to do their job safely in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis, under these really challenging times that the NHS is facing and that we're facing, you know, globally across the world. So I'm part of a UK consortium, including architects, the NHS Doctors Association, and additive manufacturing and the 3D printing community, that have all come together to support the national campaign for PPE. So I'm doing some really important work getting the equipment out to NHS and frontline workers. We've also been producing PPE and face visors using 3D printing and additive manufacturing workflows, so that we can speed up what is the bureaucracy of the NHS. It's not built for a global emergency and a pandemic of one that we've never seen. This is unprecedented. And looking at ways that the startup community can respond in an agile and innovative way to plug into the wider network and support the NHS and frontline workers up and down the country. I think the COVID-19 crisis has revealed what governments are capable of doing, and it's shone a light on the motivation that can come from collaboration and organisations and industry and academics and partners working together. And I think that we need to make sure now more than ever that we do everything that we can to support our brilliant National Health Service and make sure that we can respond and support, because clearly they do not have the equipment that they need. We've seen the 3D printing community respond in a way which has just been, I feel honoured and privileged to have been a part of this campaign, which is really doing some good and making sure that, you know, we can support the NHS as much as we can through technology, which is what we've been doing.
Best of luck with that. I'm sure only good will come of it, which is fantastic. And it just makes me think that this sort of, we've touched on it interestingly two or three times, this sort of combination of startup, of tech, of people, of collaboration, all kind of coming together. Maybe, you know, you've hit the fast forward button, as it were, for the pandemic issue. But it'd be nice to think when that's solved, and then we're faced with other challenges such as climate that you've mentioned, that a similar approach can be made, and we can face up to some of these things. Is that something I'm sure you hope for it, but do you see business and work changing as a result of of what you're seeing in a sort of fundamental way, or do you think we'll step back to where we were?
I really hope so, Michael. I really hope this does.
That's the right answer.
I really hope that it does give us an opportunity to look at ways that we could do things differently. I think that, you know, governments all over the world have been having to manage this global pandemic. And I think our government's response to the climate breakdown and the challenges of poverty and inequality, and that we must work together to change that. And I think that business, the tech community, we all have a role and responsibility to play as individuals. And I'm hopeful that when we come out the other side of this, that we're going to be thinking about ways that we can be kinder to one another, and kinder to the planet, and how we can leave a lighter footprint. I think that, you know, after the coronavirus has been dealt with, and thinking about the work that the leading scientists and academics are doing, and the next actions that are taken to suppress the spread of the virus, and also looking at how the COVID crisis has revealed what governments are capable of doing, I think that we need to look at, you know, new ways of thinking, and looking at, you know, organisations like Extinction Rebellion and all of the work that's being done to try and tackle the global ecological climate emergency, which has led to us being in this situation. There has to be change, and we need new policies. We need new procedures in place so that we can start to do things differently. And I think that this is a wake-up call and an opportunity for us to do things differently.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think on that very optimistic note, which I completely concur with, it's been a pleasure having you in the studio, but you're not in the studio, on air. Always fun to talk to you. And I look forward to talking to you in a few months' time about your, once we're out of this, on your next set of challenges. So, Kadeen, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Michael, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.